Howdy, partners. This is Sarah Nash as your host, and you're listening to Radio Namaste on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, bringing you enlightenment, the blue-collar goddess way. Remember to hit me up on our Twitter at Radio Namaste with hashtag #BlueCollarGoddess. You'll get the opportunity to be in the drawing for a free one-hour Skype session with me. We give away really cool stuff on Radio Namaste, so listen often and tweet what you hear. For example, retweeting book names like Coffee for Consciousness 101 or Your Soul's Gift might win you copies of those books and other goodies like a karma violation ticket book from the Good Karma Factory. Speaking of good karma, I'm a big supporter of the Black Dot campaign. I'm bringing this up now because today's show might cause a few of my listeners some dilemmas with personal experiences regarding sexual abuse and domestic violence. I want my listeners to understand that I'm a survivor of some really heinous stuff myself. I want to thank the Black Dot campaign for offering solutions for awareness. Is this campaign an authorized program suggested by healthcare authorities to assist in resolving domestic violence? Not yet. It's called a good idea. Like most important and very groundbreaking ideas, it begins somewhere. It was incredibly brave of the people behind the campaign to step up. And it can't be easy to carry on when there are so many who want to find fault with a possible solution. For example, claiming that the abuser will notice the black dot and step up the abuse is true. The abuser is going to step up the abuse for any reason, though. The police, the emergency rooms, the mental health facilities, they all know the signs. And I've been on the curb sitting in shock while my abuser was being detained because a police officer witnessed me slamming on my brakes when I was slapped so hard by my offender, my head hit the driver's side window. And they let him go, well, possibly because I was just too terrified or spun out to say anything. Or, I don't know, maybe because the laws were different 25 years ago. The point is they let him go. I had a black dot then too, okay? It was on my eye, it was on my arms, my legs, and my back. He finally quit beating me up when he woke up in a jail cell one morning and couldn't remember if he finally succeeded murdering me, and the authorities wouldn't tell him anything for nearly, 24 hours. Please, call the National Sexual Assault Hotline. That's 800-656-HOPE. H-O-P-E. It's available 24/7, it's totally confidential, and it's completely free. Call the National Domestic Violence Hotline 24 hours per day, every day of the year. There are some really highly trained expert advocates available to talk with you, or anybody affected by domestic violence. That number is 800-799-SAFE. So we have 800-656-HOPE and 800-799-SAFE. Thanks for listening. And now here's our interview. One of the things that I've noticed is that we are the pioneers of the real age. We're not pioneers of the new age. That's already happened. The new age isn't that new. I knew that you were the real deal when I met you in Ohio at the Ohio Metaphysical Society. What was that, 7 years ago?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And I was listening to you and I thought, he's so soft-spoken and his message is so huge. And you hadn't quite stepped into your power yet, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think that you were just taking this huge leap of faith with Your Soul's Plan, and which is a beautiful book, by the way.
Thank you.
And as is Your Soul's Gift, I have to admit, because I don't embellish, I always tell the truth. It's like, no, I haven't read A Course in Miracles. I've only read the first half of Your Soul's Gift. Some of the channeling and some of the messages in there, I've sort of highlighted, and I need to go back because I was really interested in the channeling sessions with Yeshua. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that right, Yeshua or Yeshua?
I think strictly speaking, it's Yeshua.
Okay, Yeshua. And the Yeshua that was in Your Soul's Gift, is that... the one that we know as Sananda or Jesus or the Christ consciousness?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. I had a really excellent moment with you and I want to talk about that later. But when I saw you up there and you were talking about the aura, you were able to see the line of your aura.
Right.
Go ahead. Tell us about that.
Well, that was the very beginning of my spiritual awakening. So this would be back in sometime in 2003. And I had been asleep in my bed, in my apartment in Evanston, Illinois. I woke up in the middle of the night and I was hungry. So I decided, well, I'll go to the kitchen and get a snack. So I walked down this long, narrow hallway from the bedroom to the kitchen. And just as I entered the kitchen, I saw movement, some kind of motion in the air around me. And I couldn't quite make out what was happening. You know, I thought, is there some kind of a bird or an insect in here, or what is going on? And it really startled me. But I couldn't figure out what it was, and I was really hungry and was not to be deterred. So ignoring it, I went to the refrigerator, opened it up, and then the light from the refrigerator bulb was sufficient to allow me to see what this was. And what it was, there was a thin black line, maybe 6 inches off my arms, my upper body, my shoulders, my neck. And it was floating in the air. And I noticed that if I moved, say I moved my right arm, the thin black line would hover in the air for a few seconds and then follow where my arm had gone and would always stop the same distance above my arm. Now, I had no idea what this was, but I started to play around with it. And it led to a moment that if anybody had been watching, it would have been either frightening or comical or both to them. Because I basically started to flap my arms like a bird getting ready for flight in front of the refrigerator. And I was watching this thin black line go up and down in the air, flowing after my arm. And I was just fascinated by this. Now, I had no idea what it was. But the next day, I searched the internet and managed to track down a description of something called the etheric fluidium. And this is a term that apparently applies to the space between the physical body and the edge of the aura. So what I was seeing was the outer edge of my own aura. Now, I didn't understand why this was happening at the time, but I noticed that it would happen only if I woke up in the middle of the night. And I realized that the reason it happened at night was that, you know, presumably I was out of my body when I was asleep. Uh-huh. And for some period of time after I came back into my body, I was temporarily at a higher vibration than I normally am. And so during that period of time when I was at this higher vibration, I could see the outer edge of my own aura. I think that spirit created that experience for me as part of my awakening, because there were a number of metaphysical experiences that occurred for the very first time in my life in a short period of time back in 2003. And it was basically spirit's way of saying to me, you know, there is more to the universe than you had previously thought. There's a lot more than just the physical realm, and you're on the right track. Just keep going. I think that was the message.
Well, I think there are quite a few messages in there. And I want to talk about some of your other experiences as well. But I thought it was really funny when I read in your book, Your Soul's Gift, and you're sort of taking a little bit of information from your soul's plan. But I love this part here when you're like, and then I turned to another conventional approach. I spoke with a career counselor. I took the Myers-Briggs inventory and discovered my personality type. With due respect to the MBI, which can be a truly powerful tool, this information did me absolutely no good at all. And I thought to myself, you know, what do you do when you have this, you're very analytical. And that's one of the things that I truly appreciate about you, Rob, because I call myself the world's most skeptical psychic. I do very, very well, first as a mentalist. I read people. It's a survival instinct. I was born partially deaf. And understanding that as a result of reading your words really gave me a lot of comfort, because then I was able to open myself to the possibility that I chose this body so that I would be able to pursue my sixth sense. Because as I really truly believe that as a result of being deaf, born deaf in one ear and partially deaf in another ear, I was able to really hone my skills with regard to seeing colors and to seeing auras. Now, you were the first person that I'd ever met who accurately described what I see around people. And I'd never really told people about it. I said, you know, people are like cartoons. They have these lines around them, and sometimes they vibrate, and sometimes between the skin and this line is what I call the mirage. It sort of vibrates. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that?
You know, I have only seen that thin black line. I haven't seen the energies that are contained between the outer edge of the aura and the physical body. So I think you're perhaps seeing more than I did.
Well, I see a lot more than most people anyways. And that's actually been clinically proven too. My color spectrum is like off the charts. But when my daughter became a massage therapist, she explained to me, she said, you know, Mom, there's this thing. And I'm not a doctor. I don't play one television either, but she said there's this area between your skin and the lower, your epidural layer, and then the muscle and the tissue and the nerves and the sinews. It's called fascia. And they've done studies on this. And they say that even under anesthesia, that our bodies will react to the presence of a knife. Like our skin will actually prepare and get ready for that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's, this is also clinically proven too. But when I heard you talking, I sat up in this room and I looked at you and I thought to myself, this man is so brave. This man is so incredibly brave. And I want to thank you here in public now, because you gave me a lot of hope. You gave me a lot of hope because you were very straightforward. You were very clinical. And then when you interviewed me later, I had the absolute honor and joy of channeling Sananda. And I've never forgotten that moment because he came inside of me and I had this, and I've channeled quite a bit and I don't enjoy it because the sensations are very odd. And so I've decided just to strictly work with spiritual response therapy and then getting messages from departed loved ones. But the channeling, when you actually channel, and I know that you've sat in front of some really incredible people, and these are available also in your book, these stories, they're not stories, these experiences. Do you realize, Robert, that you create that safe space for that to happen?
Well, I've been told that before, that people feel very safe with me and in sharing things with me. So I have to think, you know, that that's part of my own pre-birth plan, that I plan to be the sort of person who would feel safe and actually be safe to others, because otherwise there would be no way for me to do my work in the world. But thank you for saying that.
Well, you're welcome. I want to know a little bit more about how, because here in your book too, I've got all these pages like earmarked, and it's really beautiful. It's funny, you write amazingly well, by the way. You are an incredible writer. Are you writing any new books, any new works coming out?
There will be another book. I've just started the research for it, but not any of the writing just yet.
Well, you're an incredible writer. And it's funny because we read these words and you're so animated. And yet in your presence, you're very calm. You're very serene. How many past lives have you had as like a priest or a monk?
I think a lot.
I think a lot too. Yeah. What I loved here was when you said, when something incredible happens, I often have two reactions, intellectual and intuitive. These reactions are sometimes at odds with each other. And that was the case here. And this is, we're going back to the first time that you saw the line around your aura. Intellectually, my mind said, okay, Rob, what's the differential diagnosis for an optical hallucination? I thought drugs, but I've never used any. Alcohol, but I rarely drink. And I hadn't had any that night. Well, then I must have a brain tumor, my logical mind announced. Such was the absurd dialogue running through my head. And then in the meantime, your intuition is talking to you and saying, Rob, calm down. You know, it's not a brain, it's not a tumor. We have Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's not a tumor. You may not know what it is, but for just for now, relax and you'll figure it out. And so you embarked upon your soul plan, which was to reveal the pathway for others.
Yes, this all got started back in 2003. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with my background, you know, I was in the corporate sector for a number of years. I have an MBA, which I think is a very atypical background for the author of a couple of New Age books.
Oh, absolutely.
And so back in 2003, I was self-employed as a marketing and communications consultant, basically doing different forms of corporate writing. And I was very unfulfilled in that kind of work. I had the feeling that, you know, they could just plug anybody else into my position and carry right along without me. So it was in no way a unique expression of my soul. But I had the distinct sense that there was something unique my soul wanted me to do in this world. I just didn't know what it was or how to figure out what it was. And that's what led to the Myers-Briggs that you referred to. I took that test in an attempt, one that proved futile, to figure out what my soul's calling was. And that didn't work. And I talked to all my friends and family and said, what do you think I should do with my life? That, by the way, is never a good question to ask another person. So half of them said they had no idea. And the other half advised me to do whatever they were doing for a living. And none of this was at all helpful. And meanwhile, these metaphysical experiences, like seeing the etheric fluidium, these were starting to happen and were awakening me to greater realities. And what ultimately happened is that I went to, for the first time ever, to see a psychic medium. She introduced me to the concept of spirit guides and explained that a guide is a highly evolved non-physical being with whom you plan your life before you're born, and who then guide us after we come into body. Then she actually channeled my guides, and they said to me, you planned your life, including your biggest challenges, before you were born. And I said, well, why in the world would I have done that? And they said, you did this for purposes of spiritual growth. And then they went on and explained specifically why I had wanted to have certain very difficult experiences. I am telling you, the guides that she was channeling knew everything about me without me saying a word, and they were dead on accurate. So by the time that session was over, I was opened up to greater realities in a way that I had never been before. And it was really that session with the medium that set me on the path to writing the book, Your Soul's Plan, and then later, Your Soul's Gift.
You know, when we have these metaphysical experiences, you know, when we have these awakening moments, people often look at us, and I think what happens is that they want to open themselves up to the possibility, but there's a lot of fear there. And I think what you're doing is you're championing the possibilities that there are scientific reasons for this. And again, you know, it's like when I take a picture from my iPad and I shoot it and I send it off to my Facebook wall, it's like, I don't know how that happens. It's magic.
Right.
You know, but one of the things that I love to coin, and I keep saying this constantly and probably every one of my shows, is that, you know, my goal is to interview every doctor of transdimensional communication. I think that's what they're going to call us in 100 years from now, because I think that what we're allowing other people to do is to tap into that awakening. You know, people talk about altering their DNA, the DNA ascension, or activating their DNA. And I don't mean to be sarcastic or disrespectful, but that's literally physically impossible. What we can do is access knowledge, and you called it remembering. It's like you remembered what you had come here to do. It was like, I think it has more to do with neurons in our brain firing that haven't fired before, opening our pineal gland and having all of these portions of our body just become activated, therefore giving our DNA, which is divine, the highest potential. What do you think about that?
I certainly think that that's very possible. You know, the neurophysiology and the neurobiology of all of this is well beyond my area of expertise. I think of it quite simply, as you put it, as a remembering. You know, we're all eternal, sacred beings, non-physical beings, made, I believe, literally from light. Our home is a non-physical dimension. But then when we come into body, the vast majority of us cross behind the veil, so to speak, meaning that we forget our eternal home, we forget our eternal identity. And then things that we have planned before we came into body, usually challenging things, happen, which set us upon a path of expansion and exploration and seeking and questioning. And that opens us up to remembering our eternal identity and our eternal home and the life purpose that we chose before we came into body.
Why do you think we keep coming back again and again and again? I mean, are we brain damaged?
Mm.
I mean...
Well, I don't think we come back into body forever. I think eventually we do leave the wheel of reincarnation and go on to the so-called higher dimensions. But I think there's so much to experience here in the physical realm, and there's so much to learn. You know, one of the things I've seen in my work, and I often talk about this when I do spiritual guidance sessions, one-hour sessions with people, is that, you know, when we plan our lives, and in particular when we plan challenges, a lot of the planning is based on the desire to cultivate and then express certain qualities which are important to the soul. And I gave these qualities the name divine virtues, and over a period of years put together a list of, I think it's up to 28 now, of the ones that came up the most in the research that I did in the pre-birth planning sessions that the mediums and I looked at. And these are things like compassion, empathy, patience, unconditional love, forgiveness, and so on. You know, you could spend many, many lifetimes just developing one of the virtues. And the list that I put together that I work with in the counseling sessions I do, that is by no means an exhaustive list. There are many, many more virtues that are not on this list, but just the ones that I work with, you could spend hundreds of lifetimes on even one of them. So I think that is in part the answer to your question as to why we keep coming back into body. And then there are other reasons, such as releasing and balancing karma, healing the soul's desire to experience contrast, correcting false beliefs or false feelings about the self. These are all big motivations at the soul level, and we could spend the whole hour talking about any of them.
Well, absolutely. With the spiritual awakening part of this, and I'm really focused on this right now, especially because it's a really integral part of my ministry. The power of positive focused intention is an incredible part of, I think, our acceptance of how to manifest and create a better life for everyone. And even as far as ending extreme world poverty, you asked Yeshua, you said, you know, what can someone do to awaken? And Yeshua replied to you, essentially, it is about looking at oneself with greater compassion and understanding. You frequently beat yourselves up for all the things you think you do wrong, but you're not doing anything wrong. You're simply trying to make your life work as best as you can. Be kind to yourself and recognize your innocence. And then you go on to talk about how we are angels incarnating here on earth. Did you mean literally, or was it just like you are angels, meaning that you are divine spirit and that you live with God? I mean, what did you mean by that?
I meant the divine spirit, although as I understand it, there are angels who do assume human form from time to time.
Well, Timothy Wiley, I can't wait to bring him out to you. He's The Return of the Rebel Angels and Confessions of a Rebel Angel. And so the whole angelic thing is kind of very interesting to me, too, because of interactions with angels. Because when I was a small child, one of the reasons that my mother took me to a priest was because I told her that I spoke with angels. And it's very interesting how our spirit guides, what you call the spirit guides, I call the High Self Committee. I believe that we have a committee of 3 to 4. Most people usually have about 3, and then the High Self. And recently, I received a reading from Angela Levesque, who more, wow, I'm kind of stunned by this. I'm going to have to go back and edit that. Angela Levesque was able to channel my higher self in a way that I was able to sit down and have a conversation with myself from a place of love and joy and compassion that blew me away. And for some reason, Rob, I kept thinking of you. And I think you've been able to move through. I've watched you rapidly ascend into this place of grace and beauty, and yet you were still so compassionate. And I'm trying to remember, did you say that you were a Lemurian priest? And that I'm trying to remember if that was you, if that was somebody else.
That was somebody else. I know I was in Atlantis. I know I've been a priest many times. I do not know whether or not I was in Lemuria.
Okay. All right. It had to have been somebody else who struck me as, again, one who speaks truth. When I hear people speak, Rob, you know, a lot of people tend to take information in through their chakras. Male and female chakras react differently. And so I know that when I feel something in that place between my solar plexus and my sacral, and it hits me and it's golden, then I know it's true. And when I hear you speak, and I know I sound like I'm, you know, whoa, Robert Schwartz, but you're one of the few people that I've watched move through this world as I call a pioneer of the real age. And you haven't changed. You answered my email just graciously and beautifully, and you've been so kind. I think that's an earmark of your character and your integrity. I think it's incredible what you're doing with regard to, okay, I'm just going to go right out here. Do you have a sponsor? Because you give away a lot of your books, and we're going to give away 2 of yours, so people need to retweet this. But do you have a sponsor, or is your sponsor God? I mean, how do you live?
Oh, well, I have a private practice in hypnosis, doing primarily between lives regressions. And let me explain briefly what that is for those who don't know.
Thank you.
You start with a basic past life regression, but you don't spend too much time in the past life. It's primarily a vehicle for getting the person to the between life state. So their consciousness leaves the body in the past life, transitions back to the other side, which I know sounds a bit ominous, but is actually very easy and very natural, and everybody's done it many times. And then once the person's consciousness is back in spirit, generally they're met by a spirit guide. We talk to the guide briefly about why they were shown the past life and how it's related to the plan for the current lifetime. And then at that point, a lot of different things can happen, but usually The guide takes the person to what is called the Council of Elders. These are the very wise, loving, and highly evolved beings who oversee the cycle of reincarnation on Earth. They know everything about everybody, including their past lives and their plan for the current lifetime. And so when a person gets in front of the council, this is potentially a life-changing experience, because if they choose to, they can answer any question on any subject, including, what did I plan for this lifetime and why? So to come back to your original question, much of my income is from doing these between live sessions. But I think it's true that ultimately the sponsor is God or spirit, because, the first book I wrote, Your Soul's Plan, it took me 3 years on a full-time basis to do that. I was living very humbly off savings during that time. And I didn't know if anybody was going to be interested in reading anything that I was writing. But I had this sense that this was something I came here to do. And so I just kept going. And spirit or God made it possible for me to survive during that time. And then it turned out that people were interested in what I had to say. And so I'm glad that I stuck with it.
So how often do you give workshops then? I mean, do you actually teach this healing modality? Because I've actually never heard of this before. As a spiritual response therapist, I work with Robert Detzler, and I learned the practical application of, clearing our records and moving through karmic binds that we can't seem to shake. But this is a new healing modality. I mean, did you come up with this?
I am not the pioneer of the between lives regressions. It actually started originally back in the 1990s, and it was pioneered by a gentleman named Michael Newton, who wrote a couple of well-known books, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls. And as I understand it, Newton was a fairly conventional hypnotherapist. And then one day he had a client who spontaneously went over to the other side, who went home, and started to tell him about all the things that we do when we're not here in body. He described the homes that we create, the games we play, the classes we take in tremendous detail. Well, Newton is a bright guy. He realized he was onto something of major significance. And so he shifted gears in his career, and he pioneered what he referred to as life between life regressions, or LBLs. I refer to them as between life soul regressions, but it's a method of hypnosis, which, as I said, takes the client to the other side, generally to the Council of Elders. And so it's a way to find out any answer to any question, including what did you plan in this lifetime. I usually ask the council to also provide the person with an energetic healing, but just the information itself is very healing to know, why did something happen? What is its deeper meaning and purpose?
One of the stories that you, thank you for that, by the way, I have so many questions, and I know we're pretty much at the half hour mark here, and I'm like, oh, okay, flip through the pages, Sarah, flip through the pages. As a survivor of childhood abuse, and I'm talking sexual abuse, really horrific sexual abuse, and then having been raped as an adult, I go back and I was listening to your lecture with regard to this young woman who came to you, and she said, it suddenly makes so much more sense, because I think she had been really shamed by the fact that she had been horrifically, I think she had been raped, and she had gone back and she'd somehow, she went and kissed her perpetrator's forehead, and she doesn't even know, and she couldn't figure out why. And it was driving her absolutely nuts. And then she saw you.
Right. This is one of the stories in Your Soul's Gift.
Yeah. And I actually have not read that, but I remember we were talking about it and you said, I have to start telling people. And I thought, okay, he's brave. Now he's going to get really brave, because now you're walking into an area where people are incredibly triggered, incredibly violated, incredibly enraged, incredibly, this is an emotional wound, a physical wound. It's a psychic wound. It's a cosmic wound of such deep and wow, it's so intense. And yet when you stood up there and you said what you said with the calm and beautiful, loving, compassionate demeanor that you had, there was a healing that happened for that woman. And honestly, for myself too.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that very much. I should explain there are two chapters in Your Soul's Gift that are particularly challenging and sensitive. There's a chapter about the pre-birth planning of rape, and there's another chapter about the pre-birth planning of incest. When I was researching Your Soul's Gift, I thought that it was very important to include these kinds of experiences in the research, because they are so common, and the need for healing is so great. And a lot of the healing modalities that are out there, they're very helpful for things that are less traumatic. But when you come to things like incest and rape, they're not so effective. So I thought I had something here that could bring healing to some of the people who've had these difficult experiences. But as you say, this is very difficult ground because, number one, I'm obviously not female. And number two, I have not had the experiences of rape or incest in this lifetime. So for me as a male who hasn't had those experiences to say in a book or stand up in front of a crowd and say, I believe that some souls plan to be females who will have these experiences, that is not an easy idea to put forward into the world. And I did consider, before the book came out, not including those two chapters, not because I was afraid to include them, but because I was worried that so many people would not be able to accept the possibility of this idea, that it might cause them to shut themselves off from the other stories that are in the book. But ultimately, I just felt this is so important, and the need for healing here is so great. I have to include this, and I'm glad that I did. And much to my surprise, the reaction has been one of acceptance. Very, very rarely I'll get an email from someone or seeing a comment posted somewhere on the internet from someone who finds this idea to be entirely unacceptable and implausible. But 99.9% of the feedback I've received has been along the lines of, you know, thank you for putting this in the book. It really helped me.
Well, I think too, especially with regard to incest, because while, you know, we can be raped by a stranger or we can be raped on, you know, just because we met somebody at a bar or at an event and, you know, and then things get out of hand and no means no, but they're not listening and it's horrific. Or, you know, there's a break-in and it's violent, what have you. But with incest, you know, this happens quite often between a father and a daughter. Sometimes it happens between, I know you said females, but males too, you know, are violated and raped and harmed. So, I mean, human beings are so horrific to one another. And truly, I believe that Yeshua, Jesus, the Christ consciousness came here to show man's inhumanity to man. And if we would crucify a God, so to speak, or one who is so compassionate and filled with love, I mean, isn't no wonder that we treat each other the way that we do. But essentially, finding compassion and understanding is the key to that, and finding and being compassionate with ourselves. And Rob, you do embody compassion. There are a lot of really kind people out there. There are a lot of really good people out there. There are a lot of really tender and gentle people out there. You have, and I, you know, I don't want to put you on a pedestal or anything, but you have some of that same stuff that His Holiness has, where you have that sense of humor. You have, your equanimity is really incredible. You're very balanced. And that kind of compassion means that, you know, yes, you can be discerning and you can make observations and you can, I think what you did was incredibly compassionate by leaving this information in your book. And as you said, it wasn't for fear for yourself, but you were afraid for other people shutting down. And I think it was very, very smart of you to leave it in there, because there, every woman that I've ever talked to, because I haven't talked to too many men with regard to, in fact, not since I've read the book have I run into a gentleman who has been raped, but every woman that I've ever brought this up to, I've actually handed your book out and I've said, please read this. They all come back and they're like, wow, gosh, now I can really get on with this. And there's no blame. There's no vengeance. There's no hatred. There's no violence. It's just, it's really sad. And suddenly they are compassionate for the poor son of a gun who wasn't able to maintain his own soul plan. We're going to take a real quick break. You're listening to Radio Namaste on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. We are having a discussion with the author of Your Soul's Gift and Your Soul's Plan, Robert Schwartz. Stay tuned. We'll return in just a moment.
Radio Namaste is brought to you in part by Alchemy Stones. Alchemy Stones are completely hand-painted beach stones that combine the blend of art, sacred geometry, and metaphysics, making them not only healing tools and personal talismans, but also unique gifts for almost any occasion. What makes Alchemy Stones so special? Humans have been collecting and keeping rocks for luck as talismans and mystical power objects for millennia. They've also been painting and decorating on stone for almost as long. The intricate patterns and colors on alchemy stones are inspired by nature, sacred geometry, and tribal designs, and are carefully matched to the shape and size of each beach-gathered stone to create a beautiful high-vibration work of art. But don't take my word for it. To learn more about alchemy stones and to choose your own personal stone, visit our website at www.alchemystone.com. Alchemy Stones, a unique high consciousness gift for any occasion. Again, visit us at www.alchemystone.com.
Radio Namaste will occasionally present what we like to call the Father Mulcahy Award to those who have displayed thoughtlessness, a lack of mindfulness, or just downright selfishness. With the official Karma Violation Ticket Book, you can let friends, family, coworkers, even celebrities and politicians know they did a no-no. Just fill out a citation, slip it under a door, slap it on a windshield, or mail it. Express your feelings and opinions and help set the record straight. Join the Karma Police at thegoodkarmafactory.com and uphold the laws of the universe. Hashtag Karma Police in a tweet to @RadioNamaste, and you'll be in a drawing to win your own Karma Violation Ticket Book. Thanks to the awesome people at thegoodkarmafactory.com. Returning to Robert Schwartz and Your Soul's Plan on Radio Namaste.
That is one of the intentions of those two chapters and the two books as a whole. You know, in one of the channelings, and I don't recall now which chapter it's in, but I ask Jesus, Yeshua, about the concept of evil. And I say to him, my own understanding is that there are not evil beings in the world, but rather just people who are in a tremendous amount of pain and who are enacting that pain. And he says, yes, that is correct. And so that's how I view people who commit acts of rape or incest or some of the other things that are discussed in the book. And when we understand that these are souls who are in a lot of pain, and they're carrying the pain energetically, pain from past lives, back into body in the current lifetime, often with the intention of healing it rather than the intention of expressing it. You know, that's a noble and courageous undertaking, and it's also extremely difficult. But what happens in the pre-birth planning session is, for example, let's say that there is a soul who has had several past lives in which they committed acts of incest. So they plan to carry the energy of incest back into body for the purpose of healing it. But that plan is only meaningful and only effective as a healing tool if there's the possibility that it's not going to work. And so some very courageous soul has to agree to be the son or the daughter who says, basically, I understand that you are taking back into body this tendency to commit incest. I understand that your intention is to heal it and not express it. I also understand that there's a risk that you may not be able to do this. And out of my great love for you, I agree to be your son or your daughter. I accept the risk. If you are successful and you heal this energy and you do not commit an act of incest, that will be wonderful. But if you're not successful and the incest occurs, I'm willing to work with that, and I will use it to foster the things that I want to learn and I'm planning to learn in this lifetime. And that is the gist of how a plan like this comes into being.
Yeah, it's definitely creating a cosmic blueprint of incredible awareness. What is the word that I'm looking for? It's not just consciousness, mindfulness. There's an ineffable sensation behind that of love. I guess really just love. I mean, it's like, you know, some people love peach ice cream and some people love the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, love is the answer. And the more I get into this process of becoming a real age pioneer, and I continue having dialogue with people such as yourself, the more and more I'm beginning to understand that at the end of the day, if we are really moving from a place of love, and recently I've been reading a lot of Rumi, by the way. I had a vision, and I wasn't able to see his face, but I walked into this garden, and there were all these pears all over the trees, and he was whirling, and he was wearing this golden Sufi outfit, and I could only see his feet, and I but I knew that it was Rumi, and I was like looking, I wanted to look up at his face, but you know, I go into this meditation now and I think of Rumi's feet, but Rumi was ecstatic with regard to his love for God. And when we read the Song of Solomon, I can tell that that's romance. You know, somebody wants something. But Rumi, when he speaks of love and he speaks of this ecstatic love, is it possible that we could feel this for each other on this planet?
Well, I can't know for sure what it is that Rumi was feeling or referring to, but I had an experience of divine love that is similar to what you're talking about. And I share this in my books. This was one of the metaphysical or spiritual experiences that happened back in 2003. And to this day, it's the single most profound and important spiritual experience I've ever had. Just briefly, what happened is that I was home in my apartment doing the corporate writing that I talked about earlier. I decided to take a break and go for a walk. And so as I was walking down the sidewalk in Evanston, Illinois, suddenly, every time I looked at another person, there was this feeling of pure unconditional love for them. And I'm not talking about the kind of love you might feel for a parent or a child or a romantic partner. It was truly an experience of divine love. And it only went on for about an hour, but it completely changed everything about the way that I look at the world. I had never heard of anything like this or read about anything like this. But as it was happening, I understood intuitively what it was, which was I was in some kind of enhanced communion with my own soul. It's as though my soul were saying to me, this love is who you really are, it's your true nature. Now, at the time that it happened, I didn't know why it was happening. I only knew what it was. But the why came in later. And that is, and you mentioned this just a moment ago when we were talking about that love is behind everything. When I did the research for my first book, Your Soul's Plan, I found that no matter what was being planned, no matter how traumatic it might be, the life plan was always, always based on great wisdom and unconditional love. And I think if I had not had that experience of myself as unconditional love that day, I would still have found the same results in my research, but there would always have been a little voice at the back of my head saying, how do you know that this is true? How do you know that the life plan is based on unconditional love? Well, I know it's true because that was my experience that day. I experienced myself, my soul, as pure unconditional love. And this is how I know that what I found in the research for my books is correct. And that's why my soul gifted me with that experience that day.
And you said it lasted for about an hour.
About an hour. And there's only been one time since then that something similar happened. And you can make of this what you will. A few years later, over the Christmas holiday, I was on a cruise with my father and my sister. On Christmas Eve, we were sitting in the dining hall of the ship. Now, understand, I was raised in a Jewish family. At that time, I very much identified as a Jew, and the fact that it was Christmas Eve had no significance to me whatsoever. But as we were sitting there at this table in the dining hall, there was this, again, this feeling of pure, overwhelming, unconditional love. But it was different than that time that I was walking down the street. And I knew, I don't know how I knew, but I knew with absolute certainty that it was Jesus. And I just sat there and I basked in this love and sort of mentally thought to myself, oh, hello, hi there. And just basked in it for however long it lasted. Now, at that time, Jesus played no role in my life and was really of no significance to me. That has changed since he became part of the second book. And since I've had a number of personal conversations with him through different channels, including you. But again, there was this experience of just pure unconditional love, except that I knew that it was Jesus. I don't know to this day exactly why that happened, the way that it did or when it did, but it was just a truly, truly beautiful experience and another confirmation that this unconditional love is the foundation of the universe in which we live.
Rob, I truly believe that the second coming of Christ has a lot to do with the Christ consciousness reawakening within each one of us. Each one of us is a divine son and a divine daughter. And I think that the longer we wait for the Savior to appear, the more disservice that we're doing to ourselves, because we need to save each other. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we're here, we're saved, we're good, we got to go, but we need to learn. And, you know, in the beginning, there was the Word, right? In the beginning, there was the Word, and at the end, there will be the Word. The Word doesn't change. We do. And oh my gosh, this sounds like a Christian podcast, folks. I was raised a Christian. I was raised a Catholic. My mother was Jewish and Catholic. And then I went to go live with a Mormon family. I was raised as an LDS. And then I studied Buddhism for 6 years. I studied quite a few different religions. How about you? Before I go any further, have you do you practice any one religion, or are you just spiritual?
I'm just spiritual. Again, I was raised Jewish. I never really practiced it very much. In my family, we observe just the major holidays. But ever since I started on the path that I'm on now, I've done very, very little with religious observance. And when I do, it's primarily actually for social reasons, not because it has some particular religious significance to me.
For me, the dichotomy of the Christ consciousness versus the historical facts was really, it was mind-bending for me because... And thank you, by the way, for the channeling session that you made possible some years ago, because I've always gone back to that as one of my anchor points, because I know what I felt and saw and heard inside of me, and it was mind-blowing. However, I went through my little, okay, Jesus never walked the earth, even after reading Urantia and having experiences, and then remembering being with him in a past life. I remembered that I was a very ugly girl, and I would wrap my breasts very tightly, and I probably had a lot of hair on my face, and I would follow him, and I would sit with him, and I knew that it was this Jesus person, and he knew that I was a woman, but I was allowed to sit close to him, and I wanted to be near him, and I remembered speaking with him. I remember him also being crucified, and I remember that there was a lot of chaos in where we were that evening, and I remember so much of it, and I've always remembered it, and this is one of the things that I would tell my mother, and she would say, you know, don't be ridiculous. And I have very specific memories that don't match up with historical records. But I had had these memories even as a small child before I knew certain details with regard to, you know, how people dressed and things like that, and even customs. So when I had to go through my Jesus Never Lived part of my process, I realized then that it didn't matter. It just didn't matter, because here's where it gets really odd. Faith is a very, very beautiful thing, but you can't have faith until you have hope. And I think that the Christ consciousness is about hope. And I think that there has been so much done and said to remove the validity of a truth that we need to sort of kind of move away from this is concrete and this isn't concrete, and open ourselves up to the possibilities that we are divine and we are together. And I think at the end of the day, Rob, you want to do what I want to do. You want to end suffering.
Yes, although not by interfering with anyone's free will. So
no, agency is agency. Not even God can intervene, you know, can do that. Consciousness is about making choices. And here's the interesting thing. When you have more information, you are actually held accountable for that information.
Yes. So I would like to do what I can to offer things to the world, information, healing methodologies that will alleviate suffering if that is what someone is seeking. And that's a large part of the intention behind everything that I do now.
Well, I think the Buddhist impression of pain is not an option, but suffering is. There are some people who are not happy unless they're unhappy. And my clients, I often tell them, listen, I'm your spiritual GPS. I love the fact that I sit down with people and I do cosmic triage with them. And Robert, what I do is it's actually a numerologically sort of a universal life path reading. I tell people where they are in their path based on a number system. And I work with their high self committee. And what I think I'm going to start doing, though, is I think I'm going to start sending people to you. Because what I'm really good at is cosmic triage. When people are in crisis, they get to come and sit, and I can tell them where they need to go, what they need to do, and how to get there. But that's basically it. I don't do the long-term removal of energetic dilemmas and what have you. But what I do know is that we need more people like you. We need more people like you who are straight up and who are compassionate and loving, and yet know in their heart of hearts that they have been given a gift that can heal people.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I'm honored.
Is there anything you want to tell us before we head out of this hour? I'm going to give you a shout out with regard to your site and where people can find you. And we're going to do that Twitter contest. So go ahead and let us know where we can find you and give us a message, sir.
Well, the website is yoursoulsplan.com. If people go to the books page there, they can read large excerpts from both books for free. I will be at a conference in Arizona in September, and also doing a workshop in Santa Clarita, California in September. Both of these, the details are on the events page at yoursoulsplan.com. Headed back to Spain, to Madrid and Barcelona in November to do workshops there.
You're bilingual, right?
I am not bilingual. In fact, I'm embarrassed to say that I was close to being bilingual in Spanish and English when I graduated from high school, placed out of the language requirement in college, which I thought was great at the time, but then I forgot all my Spanish. So I know a few words, but they supply me with the translator when I go over there.
You know, my husband gave me a copy of the Rosetta Stone for Christmas 2 years ago, and it was my goal to learn. I have not taken it out of the box. I'm a horrible person. A horrible person. I have been told, my high self committee and my higher self said, Sarah, you need to learn how to speak Spanish. Actually, this is going to go live on September 24th. And I know that you're going to be at the Afterlife Conference in Arizona and Scottsdale, right? Right after that? That's September 25th?
That's right.
Okay, that's so right. What are you doing in October? Where can we find you in October? Spain?
Spain is November. October, I'll be here in the U.S.
People can find you in Cleveland. I have a lot of followers in the Akron area, so get ready.
Well, I should mention, we are in the process of moving from Cleveland to the Dayton, Ohio area, and I'll be settled in Dayton sometime in November.
Close to the Great Supermound, because that's south, right?
Yes, that is somewhere in southern Ohio. I haven't been there yet, but I would like to go.
Oh, the Great Serpent Mound is incredible. And there's always a pretty good turnout for some really high vibration soul food on the solstice down there. So, and we always stay at the Murfin Ridge Inn. Oh, ooh, shout out, product placement. Stay at the Murfin Ridge Inn. It's a bed and breakfast that will knock your socks off. It is gorgeous. Gorgeous. Hey, Rob, thanks so much for joining us. I'm very honored, and I can't wait to see you and give you a hug. You know, I'm your biggest fan. Not in that weird Kathy Bates kind of way, though.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. It's good to reconnect with you, and a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Thank you so much again. And everyone, that's Your Soul's Gift and Your Soul's Plan.
Two fantastic books by Robert Schwartz about the healing power of the life you planned before you were born. Tune in on October 8th. When we speak with James Twyman, the author of Barn Dance. You've been listening to Radio Namaste. Enjoy yourselves, people out there, and love yourselves.